This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Ready? Let's go. Give me a vacation.
Vacation!
Give me a golf course.
70 courses!
Let's get a water sport.
Paddleboarding!
Can I get excursions?
Whale watching!
Time for chill vibes.
Beach yoga!
How about a garden tour?
Balboa Park!
Give me a dolphin. What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum, and today we have an episode for you about black pudding.
Yes! Oh, I'm excited to talk about this.
Oh, me too.
And as we record this, St. Patrick's Day is about, it's a week away. It's exactly a week away. Yes.
And right. So I was, you know, we were thinking of topics and I thought of one of my very favorite parts of one of my very favorite things, which is a big old Irish or English breakfast with some blood pudding. Yeah.
It's funny because I have a new tradition, which is quarantine-iversary.
Oh, no. Oh,
and
dear.
It's coming up on Sunday, March 13th. 2 years. But I got my first vaccine on St. Patrick's Day. So anyway, St. Patrick's Day has kind of become...
sort of part of the...
Yeah, the whole thing. But I got a whole celebration plan. There's going to be corned beef and Guinness and other things that I had before I knew a pandemic was coming that day. So it's going to be good. So I have had a few black puddings in my life. And I will say the first time I had it, I had no idea what it was. And... as mentioned in previous episodes, that in part was because the word pudding can mean a lot of different things.
I mean, mostly, well, okay, no, there, no, it can be a bunch of different things, sure. But especially in American versus UK English, yes. In the United States, when you say pudding, people think of like a creamy dessert.
Yes.
And in the UK, when you say pudding, you often mean, oh, I don't know.
It could be several things.
Yeah. it could be like a steamed dessert, or it could be like a kind of sausage. There's a bunch of stuff in there.
Yes, which we will talk about.
Oh, yeah. Which I got so excited about.
Yes, I did too. Because it's always fun. It kind of reminds me of our Ambrosia episode where literally I'm still kind of unclear. It can mean so many different things.
Yeah.
Based on who you're asking. I feel like pudding is similar. However, I am such a nerd. I immediately think of Dungeons and Dragons. And in fact, I believe the first creature you fought in the current campaign we have going was a pudding. It was in the pudding family of monsters.
Okay. I don't remember you calling it a pudding, but
no.
But it was, I do remember fighting an ooze, so
Well, a lot of times what I do, a peek behind the curtains, mm-hmm. is I have like a villain I want, but it's too difficult for, like, at the time, this was your very first battle.
Yeah.
So I don't want you to look it up and be like, no, puddings can't do that, whatever. So I kind of like don't tell you what it is and just sort of make it appropriate for the level that you're currently on.
All right. That's good.
I don't
That's
want
amazing.
You to get wiped out immediately.
certainly not by a pudding. That would be, you would be a bad DM if you let your entire party perm, like, first game due to a pudding. That would be mean.
Although I will say it was like the most optional of optional battles you could have chosen. So, you know, just to put that out there.
We do like murdering, so there you go.
There you go.
Goodness my gracious. For anyone who has no idea what we're talking about, it would take too long to explain, and I'm sorry.
Yes, indeed.
We will come back to another note about Dungeons & Dragons later, though, never fear.
Or fear.
Choose your own adventure. Yeah. The first time I had black pudding was in England at like a chain pub for breakfast as part of like a large plate of like 17 different kinds of meats.
Yes.
It was so delightful. I'd read about it before in, I don't know, I'm assuming like UK children's books or possibly like The Hobbit or something like that. But wasn't really sure what it was until like it showed up on my plate and I was like, oh, that's what it is. Cool.
Yeah, I think I similarly had it on a kind of like traditional breakfast thing when I was in London. And I believe I was so unaware of what it was that I thought like something else on the plate was I had no idea what it was. But I liked everything on the plate. So
so good. This is like one of the most problematic cravings I've had in a hot minute because I don't know how to source this.
Yeah, this is a tricky one for sure. Okay. I think we can pull it off though. You can see our past episodes on Boudin or on haggis, which is related to what we're going to be talking about if you want to know more. Mm-hmm. But I guess that brings us to our question. Black pudding. What is it?
Well, black pudding is a type of sausage that is made not from ground meat, but rather some kind of like hearty grain cereal like oats or barley that's mixed with blood and animal fat and seasoned with onion, salt, pepper, and usually some kind of like heady herbs like thyme or savory. It's stuffed into casings, typically, and cooked until tender and like this deep reddish purpley black color. And often served fried up in thick slices for breakfast alongside things like eggs and bacon and beans and tomatoes and mushrooms and sliced ham and toast. I'm so hungry right now. Okay. and more other sausages. Why not put some more sausage on that plate? Black pudding is chewy and tender and fatty and salty and a little like earthy or nutty. And it's like salami. Made with the extra scrappy scraps. Yeah. It's like a dense, dark meatball without the meat. It's so, okay. So comforting and like stick to your ribs.
Oh. I just was reminded of Scrapple, which we still haven't tried.
Oh.
But yes. It sounds delicious.
I just need people to make me breakfast.
Agreed.
Well, that is something that I miss so hard right now. Oh, okay. Anyway, to make a black pudding, you cook the oats. These days, I've seen recipes usually call for you cooking the oats in water or maybe like water and milk, and then blend that with the rest of your ingredients and either stuff into a casing or maybe a pudding cloth and boil it or form it up into a loaf pan and bake it. And yeah, the finished product will be studded with like pale bits of that main cereal grain. Pork is the traditional blood and fat component, but beef and sheep are pretty common too. Blood itself is a thickening agent, but other thickeners might include stuff like breadcrumbs or wheat flour. You might add cream or spices like ginger, mace, coriander, or nutmeg. White pudding is made the same way, but without the blood. So it's just it's white because, right, it's just that cereal grain color. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there are all kinds of blood sausages made around the world in similar to kind of quite different styles. We're not talking very much about those today.
Nope. Too much.
Yep. Yep.
But we are aware they exist.
Narrowing in. Yes. Yeah. But I mean, there are all kinds of black pudding made too. Chefs and food companies have been adding all kinds of like accompanying ingredients to those basics. I've seen recipes call for hot chilies or chunks of like beets or rhubarb or apples or pears or some wine soaked raisins, some chocolate. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Okay. There are, you know, like gluten-free versions, vegetarian versions. And aside from sliced on a breakfast plate, you know, you can use black pudding however you use sausage as like the protein in a main dish or chopped up in a stew, crumbled out of its casing and used as a filling or a mix-in for savory baked goods or casseroles or what have you. Or just like straight up with some malt vinegar.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, what about the nutrition?
Tends to be a calorie dense food, has a bit of carbs and protein, and a great smattering of minerals, but is heavy on the fat and on the salt. So watch out for that if those are things you're watching for. Watch your portion sizes in general. Eat a vegetable, you know.
Always.
Always eat a vegetable.
Yes. And we do have some numbers for you.
We do. This one I couldn't track down. It was difficult to track down like economics related numbers. But I did find that there's this French-based organization called, in translation, the Brotherhood of the Knights of the Blood Sausage.
Okay. And all right, I'm into it. Okay.
And they've been operating since 1963. And in 2010, they inducted Irish black pudding producers into their ranks for the first time. They inducted three black pudding makers from Ireland. Every year, they award like dozens of medals in different blood sausage categories to different blood sausage submissions. As of 2016, they received 611 entries from 363 competitors.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I feel like they need to be inducted into our long talked about, but never actually done, a Dunker cartoon. We've got a lot of pieces.
Yeah.
Just haven't followed through. But I feel like Brotherhood of the Knights of the Blood Sausage should be in there.
Yeah. Like the Black Pudding Knight would certainly be.
Oh, yes. And he could be at odds with the Toastmaster. If anyone's completely lost, this is like a cartoon we have that's mostly pun-based about a donut that solves crimes.
Yeah, I don't know why we've never actually produced it. Yeah, it's weird.
Oh, sounds, it's great. I have some illustrations already.
You do. You do. We've got lots of ideas.
We've got lots of ideas. The follow through where we are falling down right now. But anyway, the town of Ramsbottom in Lancashire, or Greater Manchester, England, is home to the World Black Pudding Throwing Championships.
Yep.
Let that sink in. Mm-hmm. Annually, on the second Sunday in September, a steam train arrives with a golden grid that is transported to the Oaks pub with an entourage of bagpipers. Once the grid is placed, a slew of brave souls will attempt to throw some black puddings at Yorkshire puddings, which are like a breadier variety.
Yeah.
A 1 pound entry fee gets the contestant 3 blood puddings wrapped in tights to keep them from breaking apart. And these blood puddings are then thrown at 12 Yorkshire puddings residing atop a 20-foot scaffold. Whoever knocks the most Yorkshire puddings off the scaffold wins.
The winner in 2019 knocked down 8 in a single throw. Yeah.
Whoa. Uh-huh. That's pretty good.
His prize was a silver trophy filled with black puddings.
Of course it was. Oh, I love this so much. I love this so much. So this event goes back to at least the 1980s, though some argue it goes back all the way to the War of Roses in the 15th century. Basically, the story goes that both sides ran out of ammunition, so they started throwing food at each other. I don't know about that, but this event sounds fun.
Yes, it sounds tremendously fun. It I was reading some like firsthand accounts of going, and it seems like a great party. It seems like just a really great street party. They could not hold one in 2020 due to the pandemic, but it was back in 2021. So I assume it's going to be back this year, hopefully.
Yes, and listeners, if you have competed, we've got to know about it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's And like, it is internationally attended. Like,
it is. You're right. Oh, gosh. One day, maybe. One day. Oh, well, in the meantime, we do have a lot of history for you.
We do. And we're going to get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, yes, there are a lot of types of blood sausages around the world. But for this episode, we're focusing on one general type thought to have originated in Ireland and Great Britain. The British in particular do like to lay claim to it. And of course, there are ancestors and history within that. But that's kind of our focus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And it's got quite enough going on as it is.
Because, oh, sure.
Yes, as mentioned, the term pudding has been used for all kinds of foods throughout history. So that's confusion already. On top of that, some historians call the black pudding the most ancient of sausages and puddings. So that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they generally agree that the first puddings produced by ancient cooks were savory and meat-based, and perhaps sausage-like. Things like the ancient Roman sausage composed of pig's blood and thickeners, though others credit the ancient Greeks with this invention instead. Could be both. I'm always like, probably people.
Probably both. Probably just people were like, oh, what are we going to do with all this blood? Let's figure out some way to use it.
Exactly. As discussed in many previous episodes, dishes like this had a lot to do with preservation, making ingredients stretch, and not wasting anything. So when a pig is killed for eating, yeah, there is a lot of blood. And blood is pretty perishable. This was before refrigeration, too. So it made sense to encase this blood in some of the slaughtered animals' entrails and cook it in order to get as much food as possible from the livestock.
Mm-hmm.
Around 1000 BCE, Homer's The Odyssey mentions what many would call a black pudding, a fire-roasted stomach filled with fat and blood. The believed oldest detailed recipe of black pudding can be found in the Apicius from the first few centuries CE, somewhere in there, which recommended intestines as opposed to a stomach as the casing.
Mm-hmm.
It also called for chopped leeks, onions, hard-boiled egg yolks, and pine kernels.
Ooh, oh, that sounds good.
I know, right? Notably, it didn't call for any type of cereal. The most black puddings at the time were probably being made using some type of cereal. Even poor families typically had a pig that was slaughtered in the fall to last through winter months, meaning that black pudding was most likely pretty common. Though due to the timing, like so many pork dishes we've discussed, they did become somewhat associated with holidays and feasts. But pigs were not at all the only animal used to make black pudding.
Mm-hmm.
Sheep and goats were also pretty common, but all animals were fair game. And the meat used often reflected class. I wanted to include this quote from Colin Spencer's British Food, An Extraordinary Thousand Years of History.
Sausages were also a great favorite. Indeed, from Greek times, they appeared to have been a staple in the kitchen in all countries. Perhaps the reason lies in their economical way of using all the odd bits of the carcass, and once well seasoned, moistened with tasty fat, the smoking and drying intensifying the flavor, they became an addiction in a country's food, reflecting the taste of a region in their use of particular flavorings. Late autumn was the time to make black puddings, which became a delicacy to be eaten on feast days. They could be puddings of porpoise, mixed with oatmeal, seasoning, and blood, or of capon's neck, where the stuffing was forced into the neck, then roasted with the bird. How much spice was used in the recipes must have been a personal choice, partly dictated by economics. So yeah, a lot of different varieties going on.
Yeah. Sure. It's mm-hmm. right. Yeah. One of those foods of necessity and practicality that became its own separate thing.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And I also wanted to include this quote from Brid Mahon's work, Land of Milk and Honey, The Story of Traditional Irish Food and Drink. And this was a quote that they sourced from a historical document to describe a method once used to make black pudding.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Long ago, when they killed pigs, they kept the intestines to make puddings. They washed them clear in a running stream, and they were left to soak in spring water overnight. The castings were cut into 15-inch lengths tied at one end. Salt, lard, oatmeal, finely chopped onions, spices, peppers, and cloves, together with a cup of flour, were mixed with the pig's blood, which had been collected in a bucket. Each pudding was 3/4 filled and tied at the end. It was dropped into a pot half filled with water, which had been brought to simmering point, cooked for about an hour, then taken up, allowed to cool, and divided amongst the neighbors. This was always done. When needed for use, puddings were fried in a pan. This was always done. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, splitting it up with your neighbors.
Oh, sure. Of course. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Okay. just like, I really want this right now. Yes. I don't know why this, of all things, is my cravings episode. Okay. Meanwhile, back to this etymology confusion. All right. So the word pudding was in use in English by around 1300 or so. And at first it did apply just to sausages. Right. There's a bit of an argument over whether we got the word from a Germanic root, a pud, meaning to swell, or from the old French boudin for sausage, itself from the Latin batellus. I don't have a personal stake in this.
Sure you don't. Yes. And when the 17th century rolled around, puddings were still largely savory. Black puddings were meat-based, while white puddings were sausage casings or stomach linings filled with suet, cereal, and breadcrumbs, often flavored. And there were sweet varieties of white puddings. Here's a 1615 recipe for black pudding from the English housewife. Take the blood of a whole hog whilst it is warm and steep it in a quart or more of great oatmeal grits. And at the end of 3 days, with your hands, take the grits out of the blood and drain them clean. Then put to those grits more than a quart of the best cream warmed on the fire. Then take mother of thyme, parsley, spinach, succory, endive, sorrel, and strawberry leaves, of each a few chopped exceeding small, and mix them with the grits and also a little fennel seed, finely beaten. Then add a little pepper, cloves, and mace, salt, and great store of suet finely shred and well beaten. Then therewith fill your frames, some kind of device, mm-hmm. and foil them as hath been before described. Ooh. Yeah. I love these old-timey recipes, but they can trip me up because I'm not entirely sure what some of that means.
Yeah, the word that Annie was, we took a break to discuss it off air, but it's written as therewith fill your farms, F-A-R-M-E-S. Mm-hmm. I suspect that someone just made a mistake in copying out from one of these old books, and it was frames. Mm-hmm. But maybe this is a device that I'm unfamiliar with.
Yes. Listeners, I know a lot of you have some old-timey recipe books. So if you know.
Yeah. Oh, we should ping Julia Skinner, Dr.
Yes.
Julia Skinner.
Yes. Of course. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. She's so cool.
Yes.
Yes. Well, also around this time, eating black pudding became kind of controversial in European Christian religious circles. Mm-hmm. The debate was fierce in the 16th and 17th centuries, further stoked by Sir Isaac Newton's outspoken distaste for black pudding and refusal to eat it for breakfast. And so he got roped into this whole argument as sort of a non-religious support in this religious argument, like the side that was saying we shouldn't eat it. See, Sir Isaac Newton won't, even though it wasn't really a religious argument he was making. Right. In 1652, Thomas Barlow published The Trial of Black Pudding, and it actually has a really long title after that, but I did not have the strength to type it out. But you can look it up. And in this, he argued that black pudding was a violation under Hebrew law and Christian exemptions as given by the apostles. So, really.
Yeah, it was this whole, there was so much debate about this over in the American colonies as well. In 1697, a Puritan minister by the name of Increase Mather, which is a great name, he published a pamphlet called A Case of Conscience Concerning Eating of Blood Considered and Answered.
Wow.
He reckoned it was okay. He was like, well, we don't like follow every rule in Leviticus anyway. So if like those are okay, then this is okay. And also like don't get too worked up about the blood of Christ, because that's like a specific sacrament, and it's not saying that all blood is a sacrament. That's something different. He had this whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Multiple pamphlets and works on
The
morality of black pudding. Okay. Okay. By the 17th century, the British had savory puddings as well as sweet puddings. That these sweet puddings were usually a mixture of flour, sugar, and nuts. Both may have been specifically boiled in special pudding bags, which was news to me. I'd never heard about this. But
oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is also where some of the linguistic confusion comes in, because by the end of the 18th century, traditional English puddings rarely contained meat. Many were made of flour, among other ingredients, and were often cake-like. Many traditional English Christmas puddings stemmed from this. A part of this whole thing may have been due to the cooking technology available in the homes of average folks, and specifically oven temperatures, and the 17th century invention of, the pudding cloth, which allowed for folks to ditch the savory meat casing if they wanted to. Some people switched to pastry instead. Yes. And different episode, but custard.
Okay.
Okay. Including savory varieties followed a similar historical path that we've been going down on this timeline. However, the real forking of the path in terms of the English use of the word pudding versus the American use took place in the 1840s, when a lot of Americans did not need to cook pudding. And pudding was something that was perhaps seen as a meal meant to stretch when food times were tight. And Americans had so many other options. At the same time, an English chemist named Alfred Bird invented a custard powder that could be used in place of eggs as the thickening agent. And Americans really took to it, using that or cornstarch for their custardy desserts, especially for those who didn't have ready access to eggs. And it was interesting because I read a whole paper about, like, Americans going west and not having eggs.
Yeah.
And using these kinds of things. And again, this type of pudding is a separate episode. But
oh yeah,
there's a little insight, a little teaser for whenever we get to it. But in the meantime, back to savory meat puddings. The first records of beefsteak and mutton puddings started popping up in the 18th century.
Then, jumping ahead and back into the world of Dungeons and Dragons, Gary Gygax introduced the black pudding monster in the first edition of Dungeons & Dragons in 1974. It is, yes, an ooze type of monster that consumes pretty much everything except stone.
And it was going to consume you!
It tried.
It did try, and then you destroyed it.
Yeah.
There you go, Black Pudding. I'll have to go look back through my notes because there's several puddings. I'm not sure if I used a black pudding, but I definitely used a pudding for that first battle.
I didn't look into it too hard, but now I'm really curious, like how this made its way into the monster manual, like what the origin of that is. Again, if anyone knows. Please write in.
Please. I love this wide range of requests we give our listeners. And you always answer the calls, so we appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Health codes and standards in the 1970s and 80s made it harder for smaller businesses to get their hands on fresh blood, making it harder for them to make black pudding and leading to some closures. BSE, or mad cow disease, further put a dent in demand and led to the UK banning the collection of fresh blood. Meanwhile, Denmark was able to produce powdered blood, a product that was easier to transport and obtain as compared to the fresh variety. Even after the ban on fresh blood was lifted, many smaller slaughterhouses that collected fresh blood and or producers of blood sausages never really recovered. On top of that, black pudding has gotten somewhat of a bad rap in places where it isn't traditional and is sometimes called something that is gross, even up until 2013 when a popular map was circulating with the most, quote, disgusting foods of Europe that included black pudding. I personally enjoyed a 1993 Washington Post article where author Cecily Nabors described trying black pudding on several occasions on a trip to Scotland and being met with a lot of deflections when she asked what was in it, where they'd be like, oh, whatever, it's fine, whatever. So she finally looked it up and discovered the secret ingredient they'd been hiding from her was blood. Here's a quote. "These Scots, I thought, think they're so tough. Wait till I tell them what's in hot dogs."
I love that.
Oh, goodness.
Yes. So this author really, really enjoyed them. But I do also understand the kind of hesitance to tell tourists, especially what is in there after they've had it already. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that was a common theme in this article of people not knowing what was in black pudding, even people who may have grown up eating it, not being sure what was in there.
Yeah.
But with the nose to tail movement, demand is growing. And it's worth noting in some places like Ireland, while it's had its ups and downs when it comes to demand, it's never gone away.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of sustainable eating and the nose-to-tail kind of thing, more recently, a student in the UK worked with local breweries to produce a black pudding made half from oats and half from spent beer grains, with the idea of reducing waste.
Nice.
They said it tasted really good and kind of beery.
Makes sense.
In 2014, a UK artist by the name of John O'Shea put together an art installation / like science and economics experiment called Black Market Pudding.
Mm.
And this was intended to call attention to butchery practices. Let me give you a quote from the exhibit page. Black market pudding is manufactured using blood taken from a living pig. It proposes a cyclical business model to ensure a uniquely fair deal for farmer, animal, and consumer. Through a routine veterinary procedure, blood is obtained from the animal in a humane, healthy, and safe way. Producers are then compensated for costs associated with breeding and maintaining the animals that are kept outside of the traditional food chain. Consumers pay a premium market price for the pudding and the reassurance that no animals are harmed in the making of this product.
Hmm.
Yeah. He actually created and sold black market pudding in the Netherlands and Poland a couple years before the exhibit went up.
Wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Also, just to end on, I guess, a really weird note, in 2015, a British journalist by the name of Michael Mosley made a black pudding with his own blood during this whole bout of research he was doing into the history and, like, modern science of blood.
Huh.
Yep, that's, okay. Uh-huh.
Okay, sure.
He was like, blood's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to use mine for black pudding.
Did he eat it?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, all right then. Wow. I got a lot of thoughts that I feel like are a separate episode, but I think we could talk about it.
I'm not personally familiar with this personality, but apparently he is a former doctor of some kind who's been working with, I think, the BBC for, like, decades. And... Yeah, if you have any opinions about that, write in and let us know. But for sure, I like it, doing this episode really did bring me back to the Budan episode. And I know I'm still not pronouncing it correctly. I'm sorry. My French is terrible. My New Orleans French is even worse. So, because I feel bad because in that episode, I was kind of like, hey, we're talking about how the sausage is literally made, and, like, that is kind of gross. So sorry if this makes anyone squeamish. And, like, although, you know, like, I do think that's a fair, like warning to mm-hmm. put up. I think I went on too hard about how, like, some people find it gross, and that's a thing that I really try to not do about food, because food, you know, like for everything that you look at and go like, oh, that's unusual, and I can't imagine even trying to eat it, like, that's like someone else's favorite food, or it's a delicacy, or it's like part of their family's culture, and you know, so
yeah, I think that's a good thing to keep in mind whenever you're like, oh, this food is gross, like, why do you think it's gross? And sometimes it's just like you don't like it personally, like, I don't like mayonnaise. I don't like mayonnaise. But, like, you know, keeping those sort of cultural, oh, I don't like black pudding. That seems weird because it's not something that you grew up with or something you're familiar with.
Yeah.
You know, maybe just think twice before you call out something as gross that's just not in your history.
right, that you're just unfamiliar with. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite breakfasts is cold leftover pizza. And apparently, according to my friend Cody, that's something that international humans, people from outside the United States, think is just the absolute grossest thing that Americans do.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Listeners, I really want you to write it because I like that too. There's something so good about, like, the breakfast cold pizza or even, like, the 3 a.m. I'm hungry and I know there's pizza in there.
Yeah.
You don't bother to heat it up? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, reheating pizza is real tricky anyway.
Exactly.
Like, it's never going to be exactly as good as it was the first time. But there's something there's something so good about cold pizza. Sorry. Sorry no. if that's anyone's line.
Yeah, if people are just shutting off right now. No, I know there's plenty of things that my international friends have told me about American food and my habits in particular that... doesn't fly with them, but they're always really polite about it.
Aw, well, there you go.
Yes. So listeners, please write in about that.
Oh my gosh.
Please. In the meantime, we do have some listener mail for you.
We do. But first, we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back, thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with the Snorm. So I couldn't do it, but I've had that song "Nice Day for a Red Wedding" stuck in my head this entire time.
Yeah, all
nice
right.
Nice day for a black pudding, you know.
Oh no!
So that was all the right. Intent.
Yeah, no, that's great.
Thank you as always for doing your best to go along with my wild ideas.
Oh, heck. All right.
Brian wrote with the subject line of what other countries think of as American foods. Quote, as soon as I saw this title, I thought of the wonderful host over at Savor. I don't know if you've already made an episode like this about how the rest of the world perceives our food, but if you have, it's worth a sequel. I know you have at least mentioned some of these in the past, like the Japanese tradition of KFC on Christmas. My particular favorite faux ethnic dish is the cringeworthy American-style pizza from Poland, consisting of a cheese pizza with a can of creamed corn poured tableside. Huh. This was not by far the strangest victual amongst the list. This would be really interesting because we have talked about this before. I mean, given the conversation we just had about you know, kind of like viewing things as weird or gross that are just not something that you're familiar with. I do find it interesting that in my experience, a lot of the dishes I've had in other countries that were American style did involve corn, especially the pizza.
Especially pizza, right. Mm-hmm. which is cool.
Yeah.
I don't think I've had corn on pizza at like a California Pizza Kitchen kind of situation. But
I had it in Japan. I think the style was called American style, but it had a bunch of stuff on it. But corn was one of the things. And it's a very popular pizza there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was good. Like,
yeah.
It was one of those things, though, that I was kind of like, huh, corn. Okay. Right. It reminds me of the Mary-Kate and Ashley song, Put It on a Pizza.
Goodness.
It's been a long time since I bought up Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Yeah, I was about to say, this is someone, just someone out there is just like, bingo! Like,
finally! Yes, yes. Oh, what an episode that was.
Mm-hmm. Jesse wrote, have you guys done an episode on food competitions or even food ranking shows? Be interesting if you got an interview with It's a Southern Thing from YouTube. The guy does some incredibly entertaining food ranking episodes. But in general, this whole food challenge thing would be interesting to delve into for a podcast.
That it would be. And we are interested in doing it. I think we're both a little nervous.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of details, but yeah.
Yeah, our numbers section would just be the entire
off
episode.
The chart. Off the chart. I am really curious about the history of it, though. I feel like humans have probably been doing that forever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, in terms of like the like county fair style, like, oh, this is the biggest potato ever, or like whatever it is that it is. Right. Has probably been going on in every community forever. But yeah, like at what point it got formalized and just like, I don't know, like something about even like the history of ranking, like why do humans have this drive to like make that list?
Yeah. It will be an examination into humanity is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Well, for sure, it's been on our list, and we will get to it one day. Absolutely.
Someday. Absolutely.
Yes. Yes. In the meantime, thanks to both of those listeners for writing. If you would like to write to us, we would love to hear from you. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressing, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. And I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.